hideous accusations, but I can respond. And I am responding, and henceforth we will respond. I know that you know what a complaint is, but I want to make that assertion here tonight. Secondly, I was raised on a lot of cliches. One was it takes two to tango. Tonight, all I've been hearing is the officers did this, the officers did that. Look at what the officers did to our neighborhood. Nobody has said the officers responded because something happened. They got two calls of domestic violence. That's a critical issue in our society today. Domestic violence.
Robert, I'd like you to be as polite to the other speakers as they are to you.
The officers were dispatched to a call. They didn't know what was going on. They knew nothing about the incident. They knew that he had driven up onto the sidewalk. We heard that tonight. They saw blood. They knew something was going on. Neighbors called and complained. They knew a child was in the house. In our community here, we've recently had two violent domestic murders where children were present. Now, okay, we're hearing officers should have stopped and maybe taken charge of the situation. I have never had anybody come at me with a baseball bat, and I hope to God that never happens to me. The fact of the matter is they didn't have occasion to think and make an alternative. What if that woman had been killed? They did not know what was going on. And we can live this to death. But given the two violent occurrences in the society, what if they had done nothing when they had a reasonable expectation that there was domestic violence coming in, going on in there? Now, okay, there's an assertion that Mr. Andrews was protecting his family in his home. Why come to the door with a baseball bat when you're doing that, when you know armed officers are out there? What rational person is going to do that? He could have come to the door and presented himself, and it would have been all over. Accept responsibility for what you do. I haven't heard that tonight from anybody. As it happens, if someone did say here tonight, this individual had priors. Officers did not know that at the time. Priors against police officers. I'm sorry Mr. Andrews doesn't like police officers, but that doesn't give him the right to attack them. Thirdly, someone says officers go home, and that's it. Well, someone's been watching too many old movies where cowboys blow the smoke off their guns and leave. Officers suffer consequences. Look at the officer who was smashed across the ribs. He's still home. He can't come back to work. He's crippled as a result of his injury. He needs medical care. Now, officers also suffer psychological responses. You have to be completely inhuman, a robot, not to suffer some kind of response from a shooting. And I think it's terribly crude to assume that officers simply go home and don't think about that shooting again. It's unfair and it's unkind. The officers went to the scene because they had to go. They didn't go there because they chose to. So I vented my frustrations. Thank you.
Marvin, I appreciate you getting up to speak. And it's not usually do we have people in the audience who come here to support the police department, and it's nice to have more balance. But I don't want to leave you thinking that we have drawn any conclusions. We believe that by reviewing cases that we can have the greatest influence. And so I think that's what we're about tonight, is being able to review that case so that we can make fair and objective findings without prejudice. So I hope you understand that. I can speak for the board that that's our purpose here.
I don't believe you've reached any conclusions. As I said when I started out, I'm here expressing my frustrations because I've sat here for years listening to people expressing their frustrations, and this time is my turn. And that's all I really wanted to say. That's it.
And that was Barbara Williams talking on April 13th before the Citizens Police Review Board. Whatever the merits of her comments in the Andrews shooting, and frankly, they are up for dispute. And we've talked about that at other times, the fact that Andrews was... The real question is whether he was shot down when he was not in any real danger of hitting any police officers. I mean, he was not in range of anybody, and whether he was given any medical treatment by police officers prior to the arrival of the medics, but left laying face down in the mud. A number of questions have been raised about that, which were raised by our witnesses, actually, at the meeting before Barbara Williams spoke. But the point is that everything she said was on the agenda item concerning police, automatic administrative investigation of police shootings, and none of her comments relate to that at all. And you see how courteously and generously she's treated by the board, and they actually have a dialogue with her, and it takes over 6 minutes. Now hear how I get treated several minutes later. And before that happens, you'll hear Dr. Bill Christie, the previous chair of the board, really kind of giving away what's going on here, that he doesn't want to have an adversarial relationship with the police department, but simply wants to avoid the appearance of impropriety, a kind of a revealing statement, after which you get to hear my statement and how my statement is interrupted by the board.
I just wanted to make one final comment. I feel like my intention was not to be adversarial with the police department. I like the fact that we have a relationship and cooperation with them. But my point in doing this is to enhance the appearance of legitimacy and open honesty of the police department with the public.
I'm pleased that Barbara spoke up. Nothing against Barbara. She is paid by the police department to be here. She is a paid employee, and she's an officer's association person. She's representing their interests. I conceive of myself as representing the interests of people who have suffered from police misconduct, and so obviously there's a difference of opinion. Many of the allegations that she quickly made, in my mind, are false, and she has as perfect a right to make them as I do to refute them. It is, however, true that the police department, while it has the entire Sentinel as a mouthpiece to speak through, and has vast financial resources, which the ordinary citizen does not have, it's hard for me to be so sympathetic to their, given that circumstance. I think what we're looking for is fairness here. After all, when stick figures Butchie Baker, and I'll be happy, Barbara, to give you the immense documentation behind Butchie Baker's abuses of women, which prompted an entire city council investigation. I'd be happy to give you that documentation. You've never come to me for it. You probably don't want to discuss it. So that's fine. There's a whole history.
Is this relevant to the discussion?
I'm sorry. I'm responding to somebody who spoke here, defending the police force just as a basis and attacking individuals who came to this mic, taking away their own work time.
Could you
okay.
You
I will
stick to the topic.
I'm trying to stick to the topic. I mean, I think that is the topic. When someone else brings that up, I think it's pertinent to comment on it.
You're going off far afield at this point.
I will return. What does it mean, what we're considering here, automatic review of shootings? Does that mean we'll kind of peek over the shoulders of the police officers, and there's going to be no independent investigation mandate, no public hearings? I
don't think we need to hear
this
from our technique to
get
her
to
another issue.
So I need to know what is being discussed here.
There is no dialogue.
I think the people in this room need to know what we're talking. I know my name. Let me finish. I'm not trying to make a statement on a public forum here. I'm wishing you to discuss it. I asked a question not for dialogue, but for clarification.
We're not going to answer questions.
So you're not going to tell this audience, as I understand it, exactly what it is you're doing.
Can you finish up your comment?
You've interrupted me five times. I would like permission to be able to begin again and have adequate time to speak. And I would like the person who is doing the watch-taking to allow that to happen.
There's a motion on the floor. You have an opportunity for about 30 more seconds worth of comments.
30 seconds. I'm sorry. I can't speak for another 2 minutes. And I'll finish my speech here.
Jerry,
I would like to finish what I'm saying. You're interrupting. That's your privilege if you wish to do that. I'm sure that would be very appropriate for a Citizens Police Review Board, I think, particularly in
Portland. Robert, finish up your comments.
Okay. You've been at least a minute and a half of my comments. I would like to be able to continue my
comments. Okay, Jerry, would you... Hey, look, might we have to call somebody?
Robert, do we have to call somebody? Or are you going to...
If I'm allowed to make my statement, sure, I'm happy to. I've just been interrupted five times.
Right.
Eight times.
Can you sit down?
No, I want to finish my statement.
Okay.
It can be done simply, probably in about a minute, if you want to stop without interruption from any of the board.
A minute.
Okay. Keep your watch tuned. You're not saying whether this so-called proposal on the floor has anything to do with a real investigation. That is to say, an independent investigation or a public hearing. If all you're saying is that every shooting will simply eventually go through the chain of command to you, then I think it's simply a gesture that has little real bearing on what we're seeking here. I approve the idea, considering that whether there's any kind of investigation of use of firearms, it's a good idea. You should actually put some teeth in it. If you don't, it's a meaningless gesture, and simply it was, seems to be for a public relations benefit that has no substance. So I encourage you to strengthen your gesture by actually talking about adding a public hearing, an independent investigation, or an early investigation for that shooting. I recommend that. And thank you very much.
And that was somewhat of a different reception, you'll notice, I got than Barbara Williams, the Police Officers Association representative, got. The interesting thing that followed was that I didn't attend the next meeting. At the next meeting, Kevin Reynolds apparently got cut off in a similar manner by the chair, and then complained about it, as you heard, at City Council. And one of the members of the board of the Citizens Police Review Board, Alan Lang, was actually bringing up a proposal to have a sergeant-at-arms in the chambers of the Citizens Police Review Board to make sure that malcontents like myself and perhaps Reynolds were not allowed to exercise their constitutional rights with impunity. They could be perhaps hauled off more quickly. I had a letter sent. I wrote a letter and sent a letter to the board requesting that they apologize for their misconduct and that they assure us that in the future people would not be treated differentially, that there would be an equal amount of time for each person, that individuals would not be singled out on the basis of the content of what they said, even if Chair Lisa Rose or former Chair Bill Christie didn't like what they said. I received no response. Nothing was put on the agenda. I contacted board member Alan Lang and tried to speak with him about the issue. He actually was quite courteous, though ironically, he is the individual who thinks there should be, or thought there should be, a sergeant-at-arms to remove people like myself for simply trying to exercise basic First Amendment rights and give the Police Review Board the kind of input that one would think they would be seeking from the public. But of course, they aren't, and I should know that as well as you, because I've been telling you that on this radio show for years, that they are simply a fig leaf here, that their real concern has to do with giving the appearance, as Dr. Bill Christie so well puts it, of authenticity, the appearance of credibility, the appearance of fairness. And again, in this kind of crazy quilt, kaleidoscopic 1998 society here in Santa Cruz, the pseudo-progressive government, that's what we have. We have appearances. Appearances become all important. Getting back to the City Council meeting of last Tuesday, where another issue became the focus, for me at least, in my three-minute speech before the City Council. You may recall that was discussed last week on this show, the issue of the merger of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the Homeless Community Resource Center, who together essentially control virtually all the homeless services in town. HCRC, under Karen Gillette, controls lockers, showers, telephones, the Homeless Community Day Center, or Resource Center, actually. But it is a day center. It's not open at night except to her favored workers who do what they want in the evening there. And the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which controls the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is the emergency shelter program, which essentially is kind of a fig leaf program. In the summer, it gives floor space to 29, 30 people out of a population of 500 to 1,500 homeless who otherwise are facing $162 sleeping ban tickets. That's one of the programs the CCH handles. The second one is the Community House Project, which of course is the reason for the proposed merger situations. Community House is a multi-million dollar project which has attracted a lot of federal funding and some city council funding as one of the fashionable transitional programs. Rather than provide emergency shelter for people who need it or affordable housing, we have these expensive new programs that essentially stereotype and characterize homeless people as drug addicts, drunks, mentally ill people, or individuals who need some kind of special case management. It's their fault and their problem that they're on the streets. It doesn't have too much to do with lack of adequate housing, soaring rents, lack of jobs that could cover that in terms of wages. No, it's that they are the ones that have the problems, and we have to spend money for middle-class bureaucrats to oversee them. That's what the Community House Project is about, and I've always been rather skeptical of this, particularly when it supplants real services, such as emergency shelter, which I think is one that's really desperately needed here in Santa Cruz. The previous Coral Street Open Air Shelter, or the a back 40, as it was called, although it had lots of problems because it was really badly managed by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, still provided a community of people with a place to be, a place to keep their stuff, a place for some mutual safety, a place of shelter, and a place kind of to return to in the evening, where they didn't have to stand in line, get up at 4 in the morning, and so forth, as is now the case and has been the case since it closed, through the actions of Scott Kennedy and Mike Rotkin and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I might add, in 1995. Also, I might add that Karen Gillette had no protest and offered no assistance to that group, had her restrooms closed at night during that period of time. And there was general hostility to the idea that there should be some kind of tent city available or a campground available for homeless people. Karen Gillette refused to run it later on when she was asked to do so. But now apparently she's willing to accept this multi-million dollar plum and run it, the Community House Project, which is a room for 30 or 40 people and will cost them like $230, $250 a month at the very least. And supposedly, with a situation where they won't be allowed to have private visitors in their rooms, there's no sex, essentially no overnight guests, there's guards on the doors. It's a real kind of questionable whether it has, I suppose it's positive in the sense that they were talking 30 beds maybe for people who want to accept those kinds of conditions, and there are apparently many applicants who do. In any case, I was talking about the Homeless Community Resource Center merging with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Both boards are kind of a lost cause as far as I'm concerned, but one of the boards, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, did have several homeless advocates on it, specifically Becky Johnson, who you may have heard on this show, who also has written a lot for Street Spirit, a homeless newspaper. She's been a kind of a crusader locally on issues like opposing stereotyping and denigrating the homeless with such merchant-backed programs as Real Change, Not Spare Change, the Let Them Eat Paper Little Yellow Card program of a few years ago, where they were encouraging tourists to give out little yellow cards to the homeless when they were asked for dimes. I don't know if they're trying to provoke a riot or simply to show just how snotty they could be. I'm not sure what the point of that was. But of course the point was to drive away the homeless from the downtown area, which is the reason that there's a really significant merchant representation on the Homeless Community Resource Board, because Karen Gillette and her Homeless Community Resource Center serves as a way of attracting homeless to an area away from the downtown area, and so presumably from the merchant's point of view, away from having a negative impact on their profits, because they feel that the presence of poor people causes, as we say, a sour note on the consumer scene. Anyway, this merger came about, and I guess it's been consummated, because City Manager Dick Wilson, quite properly, was concerned that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless was incompetent, which it is, financially, although HCRC isn't that much better. They were in financial trouble a year ago. And he wanted Karen Gillette to run the whole show. And Karen Gillette was approached. She agreed to do it. But then, and she was appointed to that post, then some criticism of her emerged from a couple of members on the board. Becky Johnson, I think, was not so much critical of Karen Gillette as concerned that there be open meetings, because Karen Gillette's board, the Homeless Community Resource Center, did not have open meetings at all. Wouldn't let you see their agendas. It was really hard even getting a list of their board of directors. They were keeping it quite under wraps. Didn't go much for the public process thing. And she was concerned that there'd be open meetings, and that was sort of mandated. And then there was another board member, Laura Tucker, a formerly homeless woman, who was critical of Karen Gillette in other areas, ranging from possible drug use to treatment of clients. And I've kind of stated before, I couldn't care less who uses what drugs unless it affects their behavior, and then it becomes a question of behavior and not of drug use. So I discard that criticism whenever I hear it. But Karen Gillette apparently went through the roof when she heard that anybody dared to criticize her, and she resigned from her position and said she wouldn't be there unless she could, in essence, well, she just resigned. And so everyone came crawling to her, including Councilmember Kennedy and Don Lane on her board, and this entire, and you know, everybody in the Homeless Community Resource Center board area came, and petitions were circulated. First, a petition was circulated, which apparently came from her, prior to her resignation, asking that members of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, not be allowed on the new board because they did not represent the homeless. This one didn't fly too well. So after she resigned, another petition came around saying, you know, we want Karen back, I believe. I didn't actually see that petition, but I understand it was being circulated. And she agreed to come back if she would be allowed to purge the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. That is to say, eliminate the people she didn't like, or two of them anyway. And of course, there were only two, apparently, that were outspoken, Johnson and Tucker. So I spoke up about this matter at City Council, saying I thought it was outrageous that somebody could dictate her own board. She would be, after all, an employee of the board, not the person who is running the board, at least theoretically. They would be running her. Of course, in fact, she's run things forever, ever since this thing started, mainly because they find her an ample way of controlling and managing homeless people. She has a sort of a hippie-esque look to her. She's sort of outgoing and gregarious. She has a number of positive points as well. I mean, you know, she's good at writing grants. She's been around there for a long time. She's sort of developed communication modes with different people there. Anyway, the city wants her to run the board, and they were going to give her anything to do that, not to run the board, in essence, to run the board, but really to run the programs. Although, frankly, that's a job she's never had. That's a pretty big job, taking all those things on. Some of us are wondering if she can do it, but who knows? In any case, the real question is, should she be allowed to dictate who is controlling her, who is overseeing her? Should the people who are being, supposedly, which there's a watchdog over them, be able to choose their own watchdogs? And, of course, the answer obviously has to be no. But for the City Council, for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and more importantly, for Council Member Catherine Byers, who really had a key voice in this, the answer apparently was yes. So what they did at the last Citizens Committee for the Homeless board meeting was they didn't accept the idea of purging members from the board directly. Instead, they took the more subtle approach of saying that they would agree to cut down the size of the board, and then they were negotiating the size of the board. It was either going to be 6 or 9 people. And if there were 8 people, then Johnson would have been included. Tucker, I guess, resigned anyway because she was tired of the whole business. But Byers, who was on the merger committee, made sure that there were only 7. So Johnson was dropped. So in essence, the same process happened. Without there being an official purge, there was a de facto purge. So I was rather concerned about this, and I went to City Council and spoke about it, and I'll give you the full version of the speech that I gave, which actually ties in with our next item, which is coming up on this show, and you're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, the recorded version. That item will be about San Diego and the protests going on down there. The speech, however, was called San Diego and Santa Cruz, Controlling the Homeless. In San Diego, several hundred people without shelter are sleeping in front of their city hall tonight. Their demands are modest, a place out of the rain, an end to the kind of criminalization that makes it illegal for them to sleep at all outside without fear of arrest. As in Santa Cruz, when there are no legal places to sleep, people will sleep where they can and where they must, in spite of local homeless move-on laws, like Santa Cruz's 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. sleeping ban. The San Diego homeless have been living in front of their city hall, nearby Horton Plaza, and the county governmental offices since March 15th. They have been ignored by their city council. Even though federal law requires the homeless to have priority over unused military property, San Diego police arrested the half-dozen protesters who walked onto the decommissioned Naval Training Center last month. They go to trial this month for trespass and have brought public attention to the city's corrupt and abusive evasion of federal law that requires abandoned military housing to be made available to those who need it. The San Diego protest may produce results. In Santa Cruz, after all, it was protest by Jane Immler, Linda LeMaster, and dozens of homeless people in 1985 and 1986 that opened up the first cold and rainy night shelter and broke the logjam around the River Street mini shelter. It was Immler's 1990 kitchen occupations, which I was proud to be a part of, that forced county authorities to keep their word and secure for Calamity's Cupboard, her nightly homeless meal, a much-needed certified kitchen. This happened, however, at a price. For her protest, Immler was purged and her meal given to ambitious county-selected bureaucrat Karen Gillette. Gillette's free meal in its early days was plagued with complaints of bad food, cronyism, and hostility to activists. Gillette has suffered an undeserved bad rap for marijuana use, which is nobody's business but her own. Of more legitimate concern are the rights of homeless Community Resource Center clients to organize, to speak out, and to disagree with Gillette. without being evicted from the free meal, as Sheila Gottschalk was in 1991, for participating in a peaceful protest, without being physically assaulted by Karen Gillette's friends, with Gillette looking on, as Linda Edwards was in the spring of 1992, for circulating a petition asking for better food and for an end to censorship of the free meal, without being barred from the meetings of our Homeless Community Resource Center board, as almost every individual has since the board began meeting in 1993, unless they go through her personal screening process. As Gillette has established unquestioned dominance over the program, her tolerance for dissenting views seemed to have grown until recently. In early May, Gillette resigned in a headline-grabbing maneuver designed to secure for her yet more power. She already had the executive director job. What she demanded was the power to purge the only remaining critics on either board, a homeless advocate and a formerly homeless woman. Would Catherine Byers, city council member on the merger committee who was in a key position to deal with this, roll over for this latest purge? Sadly, the answer seems to be yes. Byers has made sure that the size of the new board carefully meets Gillette's specifications, that is, has been constricted to exclude the critics. Those purged are not just critics of Gillette, they are watchdogs who have spoken out against waste, mismanagement, bad priorities, and anti-homeless prejudice in council-funded programs and council-endorsed police abuses. They pointed out that the multi-million dollar community house program, a so-called drug-free program, was being located in a high drug trafficking area. The community house was supplanting a campground that served many more at a fraction of the cost. That the program was a mockery of Paige Smith's dream, although it's being named the Paige Smith Community House, in that it sets up guards, no visiting policies, and no sex guidelines for grown adults. Both the women ousted in Byers' purge are longtime advocates of Community House, unlike myself. They have put hundreds of hours into supporting homeless social services and are now being ousted to pander to one woman's paranoia and another one's political cowardice. San Diego homeless protesters face similar hostility from Don't Rock the Boat poverty czars at the Salvation Army funded like Gillette is here to control the homeless like children and keep them safely out of sight and away from the shops of downtown merchants who hold powerful positions on Gillette's new No Critics, Thank You board. And that was my speech at Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday night. San Diego and Santa Cruz, Controlling the Homeless. It's the longer version. I did a shorter version. If you'd like a copy of that speech, just give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'd be happy to arrange for you to get one. It's one of many speeches I've made over the years on similar subjects, and not a bad speech. Although it was pointed out to me, for those of you who are into writing speeches, that speeches can be more effectively done if they provide an alternative for the council to follow, which this really doesn't. It's more of an educational effort. And it's also useful to write a speech that kind of keeps you in the dark and lets you reach your own conclusions, which the speech really doesn't. It's more of a polemical speech. So for all you budding speechwriters out there, here's a little workshop on how to write a speech. But getting back to the issue of what's going on down south in San Diego, which we're going to turn to next after hearing this brief musical number, we're going to be looking at what's really becoming a mounting confrontational situation in San Diego, due to explode on June 19th or before. And I actually will be hopefully going down there and maybe able to give you an on-the-spot report. How many cops does it take to pass?
member of the, what do you guys call yourself in San Diego in front of City Hall?
People's Establishment.
The People's Establishment. And
right.
How long have you been, should we say, a part of the People's Establishment?
87 days.
87 days. And actually, the People's Establishment has been there, have you been there since the first day? Or?
Right. March 14th or 15th.
Uh-huh. And what are the, you've been parked in front of San Diego City Hall.
Breezeway of the City Hall and the front sidewalk around the City Hall that is called the Concourse / Civic Center.
Uh-huh. And how many are you generally per night?
Well, we've been averaging over 100, but now that it's raining a little bit, we're over 150 the last three nights.
Okay, and not only that, apparently you got the thumbs down from the mayor at the last city council meeting, is that right?
She was pretty adamant that the city council was going to be working on, that her office as mayor is working on a resolution for the city council to vote on what to do with us, which I assume would be a resolution that we're an unlawful assembly or we're illegally lodging downstairs.
Now, why are you doing all this? Are you guys just having a gay party in front of City Hall trying
to... excuse us if we do, while we're having a prayer vigil and protest, having a gay party at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that people are coming together and much more unified and much more educated as to what's happened in San Diego over the last 8-9 years regarding the homeless political football that... You know, we're the pawns, and the power brokers use us, and the social providers are using us, and everybody gets what they want. Meanwhile, we're still out on the streets.
Now, what exactly has been happening in San Diego for the last 8 years?
Well, the biggest thing that happened was the naval base here in San Diego closed, okay? Obviously it's like 100-some acres at Point Loma, a beautiful bay area that the Navy has owned for 100 years or so. And finally it was closed under the Base Closure Act. And in 1994, the top priority for the base closure, this newfound wealth in the United States for cities, because they turned them over to cities, the top priority was for homeless shelters and low-income people. You know, to house them with this new wealth in buildings that the Defense Department spent millions building instead of just tearing them down and useless to... A shelter of the poor.
How many housing units are actually available and vacant there now?
They had a plan that a reuse committee, a group of homeless providers and homeless advocates met, and they had a plan for over 1,200 beds of emergency shelter and the estimate of another 500 units for low-income families that the base could handle with the slightest turn of a switch, because it would just... You know, the buildings that were housing military personnel were there, and all they had to do was turn over the keys.
And what did they do?
Well, as the city, and in my opinion, and the powers of development came into San Diego since 1995 or so, and have put in politicians that are to their liking, and determined that, well, if we put these homeless and low-income people on this base, then the wealthy community of Point Loma, the wealthy community in that area surrounding the bay and so forth, they're going to have to be seeing all these poverty people. They'll be going to our schools. Their children will be educated with our children. They'll have to, community will have to develop together. No, we don't want that. So they got together and said, well, the Naval Training Center in San Diego, there's more than adequate shelter, which is a political decision they determined, and said, look, you guys, for the next couple of years, when we get this $6 million, we'll add additional shelter, because we need more transitional housing, people that would be staying, say, 3 to 4 months, and in alcohol, drug, or mental illness type programs. We'll develop those right now, because for the buck, they're the most effective.
Transitional housing, that's the new scam that says we don't need emergency shelter, we don't need affordable housing, we need more jobs for these kind of poverty pimp bureaucrats who are running people through programs.
I guess same program we have in San Diego, I'm sure you have in Santa Cruz or someone has in Philadelphia, you know. Yes, that's a sham. And, well, the reality of the situation is that the providers, even though they weren't even consulted with the concept that the shelter was not going to be built at the base, and utilizing the terminology of getting around the you know, the Kidding Act of 1994, where it said, well, if reasonable shelter is available, then the base does not get have to have that high priority for homeless.
But in fact, reasonable shelter, as I guess Ferris Kiro and Roger Scott and others from your group have said before, is not available at all for at least 2,000 San Diego homeless, right?
Exactly. And that's just a mistake. But, you know, they're always throwing out, you know, countywide, it has to be a regional problem. To stick all those 1,200 and 500 units in Point Loma is unfair in one council district to handle the whole burden of the homeless and the poor. So don't put it in my backyard, spread it out to everybody's backyard. Well, when you spread it out, you divide and conquer, and it's a political decision to put up any type of shelter for even 50 people. Because you're going to go to the city council to get the conditional use permit approved. Now, you know, the neighbors go marching up and say, we don't want it next door to us. And the city councilman knows, well, the people that vote are the people that are marching, not the people that we're trying to serve. And so there will never be any small shelters built in neighborhoods throughout San Diego. So once again, like we said, you know, the emergency shelter is not provided in San Diego, and there people are suffering. And we have people dying in San Diego. It's not that it's 100% 90 degrees or 80 degrees in beautiful weather. We had some cold winter nights and cold rainy nights. And I can tell you, two women, one in Chula Vista and San Diego, died because of weather implementation. You know?
Because of the failure of the city council.
Yeah, and for 3 years, they're just...
keep its promises, huh?
Yeah, well, the city council has set up a redevelopment agency with tax increments to build hotels on that Point Loma and draw up some resort, more tourists. The hell with the homeless.
Mm-hmm. So I guess at some point... folks from Streetlight Newspaper and homeless people, I guess sometimes connected with Urban Safari and other groups, got together in March and decided just to start their... What actually precipitated this latest...
closing of the winter shelter.
Uh-huh.
Okay. When they have a seasonal shelter plan that was to terminate March 15th, okay? And as it was getting down to that, we had all these glowing reports that the city spent $875,000 from December 15th to March 15th, and what a wonderful job they did, because this percentage of people got jobs, and this percentage of people moved on to their own apartment after they saved money and cleaned up and all this other stuff. And it just made sense to us that while maybe it's expensive, $875,000, that they might be able to do it cheaper. Why not just keep the place open because it's such a success? You know, if you're getting 500 people off the streets in 3 months, let's get another 500 people off the streets the next 3 months. Why do we have to wait till December 15th when it's raining and cold to get people off the street?
What was the cost of running this? I mean, was the city concerned that there was no money?
They got $875,000 altogether from federal grants and so forth, from their OBG grants and stuff like that. They had some money. They have a seasonal shelter plan for next year. They have a budget of another $875,000 or so. And they're pretty much going to do the same thing they did this one. But our argument in March 13th at Forrest basically was doing his prayer vigil for was, hey, why? If it's such a success, why end it?
So,
you're telling us it's a great job? You're right. Well, let's stay another month. Well, they did stay open another month and work that out because the weather El Nino was continuing to be bad. But meanwhile, we were developing from 12 to our current 162.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the idea now that we're educated about how the Naval Training Center went down and how people have been sleeping in the streets for 3 years so they could develop it, knock down those million-dollar naval buildings and put up hotels for Marriott, Hyatt, or whatever, you know, those power brokers have been, you know, getting people elected over the last 7 years knowing this is what was going to happen. Coming to make another $200 million each.
So the mayor, this last week, essentially told you guys that they'd had enough. They not only were they not going to build the housing or open the housing, I didn't have to build it, all they have to do is transfer it.
Right.
Or alternately open up housing in neighborhoods or shelters in neighborhoods. They were just going to what? Have you all lodged in jail at a cost of 5 or 10 times as much? Is that
open a brand new jail in San Diego, so they get paid by the number of people in there from the state, so they could fill it up pretty quick for a weekend with 160-some people.
And
that's just
that's
they would just give people tickets, I understand. But the point is, they want to disband the group, you know, to protest. They want to end it and not give us anything. They don't even want to negotiate with us.
And what has been the reaction of the protesters to this move by Mayor Susan?
Well, it's brought us all together, Right now the vote is zero people want to get arrested, but we don't know what to do, so we're going to try to put together either a California state court action or a federal court action. We're sending out proposed memorandums of law, the different lawyers, ACLU, volunteer lawyers, to see if we can get them on board. Mm-hmm. With some interest that, hey, there is some right to have sleeping as part of a protest. The uniqueness of homelessness is basically that we have our things on our back, and it may look like a campsite, but it's still a protest. And, sleep is expression, and it's been, in several cases in the federal court, it's been found to be part of expression.
Yeah, expressive conduct, free speech.
Well, sure, what could be more powerful statement from a homeless person who is sleeping on City Hall to show the politicians and the people, this is what it looks like to sleep on a city sidewalk.
But of course, that was like Creative Community for Nonviolence versus in Washington, D.C. in 1984, but when they picketed and I guess at a camp in
the Supreme Court
across from the White House.
Oh, the White House, yeah.
Yeah. However, there's also another angle here, which is that in Miami, and I guess in Fort Lauderdale, as you probably know from Roger Scott, the courts ruled that it didn't even have to be a protest. The city could not criminalize basic function of life like sleeping without setting up a safe zone where people could go. Is that the angle being considered too?
The city council or the mayor's office totally rejected a safe zone to sleep.
Right, but I'm talking, the city council seems to be either extremely biased against the homeless or perhaps corrupted by a development interest or both. What about the courts?
We're trying. That's what I'm saying. We got the memorandum prepared as we speak here, so just been typed up and faxed over to ACLU for their review. We got several attorneys that we've been asking for help, but I'm prepared to go in pro per myself, and I applied for the permit April 24th to allow us there to sleep.
And what was their response when to your application?
Since we don't have a definite time, in other words, I don't want to end it July 4th or 10th or something like that. I want to end it when we have a safe zone to sleep and to move to after we leave the vigil. But they say that's an indefinite period, and of course...
So give them a definite time, and then when that time ends, apply for a second permit.
Right. But we did that at the county, and the third permit, they said, no, that's enough of the protest.
Well, that's fine. They can say whatever they want.
Right.
They've already said that now, right? Doesn't really matter. You wouldn't be losing anything.
Well, the protest continues in San Diego until there's a safe zone to go to, because I don't feel comfortable going up there as a chairperson and saying to them, guess what? The mayor or the police want us to move. Now go back to your separate corners, wherever you were in the street.
Yeah, head for your alleyways, your bridges, and your sewer system lines, right.
I can't see that. I don't want them to get arrested. But, if they want to play hardball, we want to bring in the Naval Training Center didn't do anything. Homeless.
But on the other hand, you said that the people around the protest are not willing to get arrested around it.
Well, they don't want to.
Right.
But by Friday, we'll see what happens, The situation is that, we don't have any lawyers to get them out of jail.
So Friday the 19th...
Come on in, we know.
Friday the 19th is the deadline.
Yeah,
stay in jail or to return to jail, it puts the city in a difficult position.
Good point. I'll have to mull that over. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, that's what, in fact, there was a huge situation in San Diego in 1910 when the Wobblies, the IWW, came to town here.
Uh-huh.
And they did what we call speakouts on street corners, where they simply read the Constitution aloud. They were fighting essentially a labor struggle against, hiring agents. Uh,
hiring agencies that were denying human rights or basic rights for labor workers. I may be confusing that this with another city too, but they were doing it in San Diego, and the jails were packed. And I don't know. I think they kind of won a draw in San Diego, but they did have a real impact. Although, of course, there's always the danger of violence by police, and there's always the danger of being isolated.
If it wasn't for the history of the labor movement, women's suffrage, civil rights, they're our role model. Our only difference is with the uniqueness of homelessness, we don't have the basic necessities of life, such as food. You know, at least those movements had those kind of basic things. We have to depend on food lines, and we have to depend on generosity for such thing as clean socks. But, I mean, I understand, and I'm proud of that history of protest, and I do believe that if we do have to fill the jail, we will.
I just read on an email that Seattle is confronting a similar situation.
Yeah, we're in contact with them through one of their newspapers. Forrest has contacted them several times.
You're talking about Making Change, Real Change.
Real Change.
Seattle newspaper. Yeah, they, according to this email I'm looking at now, the city has been stepping up pressure to sweep the encampments, especially the largest central and most visible encampment, the jungle. Recent murders among homeless women have been capitalized on, not to increase real safety programs, but to justify clearing the jungle, effectively making those who have to sleep outside even more isolated and vulnerable by scattering them. Is this a concern you have here in San Diego?
Absolutely. It's the same thing. The beauty of having the safe place is the people are coming together, and we're finding out that this belief that the homeless person is an isolationist or a hermit who wants to be nothing to do with the world. I mean, I've heard beautiful poetry at meetings. I've seen beautiful artwork on some of the posters. I mean, the conversations are enlightening. More religion, Bible reading, a Bible study group here. I mean, it's unbelievable what things people want to do when they're in a community.
Yeah, we have a similar community here in Santa Cruz in the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, subsequently denounced by authorities as a...